Former NHL player and coach Adam Oates now, of course, with OPP Hockey, as he is working with individual players on skill development. Oatesy, how you doing, my man?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm very well. You were in Edmonton watching the last few games, and you know the Oilers' offense, excluding the McDavid line, has been struggling. As an offensive guy, when teams go into a funk, and you know obviously Taylor Hall's in a little bit of one offensively for him, 10 games without a goal. It's the second longest of his career. Leon Draisaitl the same. You know, the coach obviously coaches mix and match lines when things aren't going. As a player, did you ever do anything to try to were you superstitious? Did it change everything to try to get out of a funk? How'd you do it?
You know what, I would say the biggest thing is, depending on how you're feeling, you know, you probably go out a little earlier in the rink and you would just work on some skill stuff and shoot some more pucks, get some more shots on the goal. You try and find anything you can to kind of like get your confidence up, make you feel good.
When watching the order, did you see anything that's lacking right now from their overall offensive game as a group and why they're not scoring?
No, not really. You know what? I thought it was two pretty good hockey games. When you think about it, over the course of 80 games, you know, scoring is so tough in our league that you're going to have droughts. It's hard to produce every single night. Obviously, the Toronto game, Connor just came back and Nederland had a great night. And the game got a little, you know, it was a bit of a blowout. And then the Winnipeg game, I thought was a very good hockey game. The one thing that sticks out to me is I feel the Oilers are playing better in their own end. And, you know, you're mixing and matching. You're always trying to get a chemistry. You're trying to find something. I know Todd, he does that very well. And, you know, it's just not going in for a couple guys right now. But I think the team's playing pretty good hockey.
Now, I sat up with you and we had a really unique discussion about becoming an arm length player for offensive guys and how for the thinker, some guys, it's almost counterproductive because a lot of offensive players don't like it when there's contact. But in reality, you can actually control the defender better. Explain the arm length and why more offensive guys should use it.
You know, it's a hard thing to explain, but really, since the rules have changed, the defenseman in front of the net, covering their own goalie, it's more of a shot blocking era and it's more of a position era, where kind of my generation, the D could be very more physical. They could flash more, cross check more. So a player had to learn to kind of get inside the defenseman's triangle and engage him, because otherwise, when you go to the net, you're going to take a lot of abuse. So since the rules have changed, the abuse is not the same. So it's a little bit of a thing that the offensive guys have lost a little bit of that engagement ability. So I call it like an arm's length. And you kind of stay 2 feet away from the guy. Where the guys that come to mind for me the most are the Sedin twins. You know, because they weren't great skaters, they had to learn how to play in tight areas. So they engage the defenseman or the center that's covering them. And they take that contact. And they know how to do that and protect the puck at the same time and look for the next guy. And that's, it's one of the things I work on with my guys, and it's a very important skill. I think it's a skill that's kind of lost a little. And lucky for me, being a centerman, almost every single draw you take your whole life, especially when you win it, you kind of win it between your legs and you kind of spin into the guy and try and protect the puck. And, so it's just a skill that most centermen learn naturally.
So is it something like you work on players and you talked about the Sedins who know how to use it properly, because some guys you like to feel where the defender is. And if you feel where he is, that's how then you can exploit him.
Yeah, that's a very good way to put it. You want to engage him, touch him. When you think about our game, half our game is speed and racing up the ice and racing down the ice. And the other half of the game is against the boards, 10 guys in the offensive defensive zone. And you're trying to find those openings. And, so now there's no skating. So how are you going to try and create openings when there's not a lot of movement going on? So that the best guys that do that know how to engage a player and bring the next guy to him.
Adam Oates, a Hall of Famer, joins us. Now, Adam, I want to talk about the Patrick Kane goal last night. Did you see it against Toronto?
Yes, I did.
I get talk about Patrick. Like, his skill set's obviously off the charts, right? But how do you see comparisons at all between him and McDavid in certain similarities in their game?
Yep, I do. Now, if you look at Patrick Kane's goal last night, He came across the ice. The puck's rolling, bouncing. It's got a certain amount of momentum to it. He takes it one-handed, and he gathers it to himself so he doesn't break stride. And, you know, that's why I'm a stick fanatic, because if you don't have the right hockey stick, you can't do that. And then he's able to keep his momentum, stay in front of the defenders, pull it to his forehand, and shoot far post. You know, you guys got to see Messier do that a lot. It's the same exact play. And in the Toronto game, on Jordan Eberle's power play goal, Connor did that where he got it to his forehand, same look, facing the goalie, not the hockey school wrist shot. He froze the goalie and set Jordan back door, and basically an easy goal, and he froze everybody. So, you know, that's why I'm a stick fanatic. Can you go from your backhand to your forehand with ease?
And it's a skill set that obviously comes from having the right tool. I know you're a huge fan of people having the right stick. And if you have a right stick, you have a much better chance to being successful and handling the puck in many different areas. Now, overall as a team, we talked a little bit about the Oilers and what you've seen that they're lacking offensively. The Montreal Canadiens are in the same boat in the other conference, a team that's really struggling without their goaltender. And they just... Now, I don't know if it's... I think it's a case maybe if they just don't have enough natural offensive guys. Or... Maybe the combination on top of it now is they have a team that doesn't have a lot of confidence at them. But you look at the Habs, how do you think they have to approach trying to improve their offense?
You know, I think they're in a tough position right now. If you think about it, Carey Price was our league's MVP. And, you know, he's MVP for a reason. So this is not a new subject for Montreal. Last year he was getting peppered, and he gets so many chances against. But when you have maybe the best goalie in the league, he becomes MVP. So this is not a new formula. And, you know, you're throwing a backup, a young kid in there who's done an admirable job. But sooner or later, you're missing the best player in the world for a long period of time, and that affects your club. So it's really hard to fight through that. At the same time, I don't think their special teams have been great, and their power play hasn't been great for a couple years. You know, they had a great start, and then they've kind of been just leaking oil a little bit since then. You know, I would say that they're still a very good defensive team, and they got to try and find a way to maybe get that power play a little bit better, and you know what, and still focus on defense, because you know what, they're not going to score a lot of goals. They've proven that, so they can't give up too many.
Well, the Habs power play, like, they seem to have PK Subban has a bullet, Markov has a bullet. You've got Pacioretty, who's a very good shooter. Why is that power play not working?
You know, I'm just not a big fan of a lefty-righty on the top. I like the guy being the same shot, either righty-righty or lefty-lefty. And I think, you know, just it's another thing in our game where the point shots don't score as much as they used to. And, yeah, they both got bombs back there, but it's a secondary chance, second wave, stuff we've talked about before on the show, where you need that secondary chance, and you can't be a one-and-done power play. So, I think there's adjustments they could make, and they have the personnel.
Now, why aren't you a fan of lefty-righty up top?
I just think the goaltenders, you're giving them too much time to reset themselves, and the penalty killers too much time to reset themselves. You know, and when it's a lefty-righty, it's a tough one-timer. It's more of a lateral pass. You're not passing on an angle. And I just don't think you have the same advantage over a goaltender that you would in other scenarios.
That's interesting, and you're right, because the game has changed. There's more penalty killers getting in the shooting lane, so it's harder to score on point shots for the most part. Now, what about bringing your defenseman down closer, like maybe almost going to an umbrella with the guy who has a heavy shot?
Well, I do like the umbrella, and I think they have, you know, PK obviously has a very heavy shot, as does Markov. And you know what, they're in a tough dilemma because both guys want to be on the ice, and they're both very good players, your best 2D. But it shows that you still need some chemistry. At the end of the day, you need chemistry. You just can't have your best players on the ice. And sometimes you need some unselfish guys to fit the puzzle. And, you know what, it makes it very difficult.
Adam Oates joins us. Adam, Alexander Ovechkin had a hat trick against Minnesota the other day. And you know, he's got 35 goals and a very realistic chance to score 50 once again. And you know, you played with some pretty good shooters over your time. Alexander Ovechkin, when we talk of, he's got to be in the conversation of greatest goal scorers ever.
Oh, no question. No question. I mean, you know, obviously I didn't really see the guys before my time, but yes, the score as many goals as he does in this era, and he can score from kind of anywhere. His velocity, he knows how to shoot it, he knows how to release it. He can create his own shots with his size. very dynamic, and then he gets his rushes. You know, I mean, he goes end-to-end a few times, and he gets momentum. No question he's got to be considered in the top group.
You coached him. What makes him such a good goal scorer?
You know what? I think, honestly, we go back to the power play a little bit where, you know, they've been basically number one in the league now for 4 years. So he knows, and it's one of the things we talk about, like by having a good power play, he knows he's going to get 7 to 10 attempts every night. And there's no better feeling for a goal scorer than knowing you're going to get your shot. And, hey, listen, we all have our – every single guy has their confidence package, whether it's a goalie, defensive defenseman, or scorer, passer, whomever. You have your feelings that make you feel good in the game. So for a guy like him, he needs a shot. And the more shots he gets, the more his game, you know, he's got his confidence going, and the more he plays a complete game.
Now, obviously, as an offensive guy, you understood the importance of confidence, even for the great offensive players. We're seeing it this year. Sidney Crosby went through a little bit of funk. Now he's rolling. Ryan Getzlaff couldn't score to save his life, but now he's back to being the player that everyone expected. When you play, do most coaches really know how to deal with the high-end offensive guys, or is that something that still, even in today's game, is a tough thing to relate to? Because most people don't know what it feels like or what you need to be a top-end producer in the NHL.
Yeah, you know, it's a tough subject because a lot of people think they know all the guys in a slump. But, you know, until you've actually experienced being in one, especially in our league where, you know, you have a strong media and it wears on you, a guy who wasn't a point producer, you only think you know what the guy's going through. You don't. And it's just another one of the subjects about how to deal with guys, and that's why in your coaching staff you want to have at least one guy that was a point producer to remind the coach, like, hey man, he's in a funk, we got to do something to get him out of it. And that's why with a lot of guys I joke, you know, the empty net goal is a very important point. You can have a 3-game streak where you haven't done anything, and all of a sudden you get an empty net or assist, and that changes your feelings for sure, because you got rid of a goose egg, and now even though it's only an empty netter, it matters.
It is funny about the psychological part of the game, especially for offensive guys. And I do see it with coaches sometimes. They're looking at, especially when you got a 2-goal lead and the other teams pull the goalie, a lot of the times they're putting out guys who aren't necessarily the best defensive players, but they're offensive guys because they're hoping that if they get a point or a goal here, that will translate into more offense down the road.
Oh, no question. No question. And you can talk to a lot of goalies, and there's times where they make a save, but they guessed wrong or they moved wrong and just got lucky. And that rattles them. And even though they made a save, it didn't go in, yet their confidence is broken. So they're hoping that the next save they make, which happens fast, they do the right thing and it hits them. And now they kind of like conquer their own demons.
Adam Oates joins us. Did you ever have a coach when you played who went out of his way to help you get out of a funk sometime?
You know what? I really didn't in the NHL. And, you know, it's even more prevalent now just because the scoring is so much harder.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fact. It's part of our game. So that's another reason why I think the power play is kind of a cure-all, because if you're getting points, you know, every single power play goal, pretty much there's 2 assists. But 3 guys getting a point. So that's kind of conquering 3 demons right there. So it is kind of a cure-all when you have a decent power play.
Now, you are more of a playmaker than a goal scorer. If you were in a slump offensively, did an assist night? It might be strange asking a playmaker because everybody loves to score goals. But did you find, like, if Brett Hall got an assist, did that help his psyche as much as it did a goal, or does a goal scorer need a goal?
A goal scorer needs a goal for sure, and the assist man needs an assist. For me, face off and an assist. Like an assist early in the game, I relax. If I win a few draws early in the game, I can relax. If I don't, I'm skating around the ice thinking about it.
One last one. Speaking of draws, because you weren't the biggest guy, but you were very good at faceoffs. And I know when you came into Edmonton very late in your career, Jared Stoll talked about how, man, Adam Oates really helped him in faceoffs. Now, he had to work a lot on it, and it became a very good faceoff guy. The Oilers, young guys, you know, McDavid just doesn't have strength yet. Draisaitl's bigger. Nugent Hopkins being in the league now 4 years, and they haven't been able to improve a lot on it. Now, strength, of course, is one thing, Adam, and when you look at top guys like Taves and Crosby, who were only 40% guys their first year and then, of course, vaulted up and became much better, How does a young guy go? Is it just strength? Is it timing? What are the key things that they need to work on to become better face-off men?
You know what? I don't think strength comes into it at all, actually. It's, you know, just like everything else, there's a formula to it. There's some math to it. There's a positioning to it. You got to understand some of the technique. Patrice Bergeron's probably the best in the world, and he takes draws on both sides of the ice. He just knows what he's doing. It's not a strength component. And that's kind of another misnomer. You have to know the formula. You have to know how to take them. And when I played with Stoli at the end of my career, you know what? He understood how to stand, how to get position, where to put your stick, and a timing sequence to it. And we worked on it a little bit, and he became a very good drawman.
Is the timing sequence that much different from your forehand to your backhand on faceoffs?
No, it's very similar. You have to remember there's a cadence to it. No, the referee gets ready. So you're standing there, you're waiting for your opponent to kind of get ready. You want to kind of do it in a way that you're not standing set too long so you get heavy. You want to relax a little bit. A lot of guys over try, for sure. And that's what I mean. There is a certain cadence to it. And the referee is very important in that. And that's why you have to develop a relationship with those guys. And you know what? Everything matters.
Interesting you brought that up, because Todd McClellan has said today too as well, sometimes just by, you know, the experience of knowing the linesmen and their cadence and timing. And so when you would get to know them, did you know right away, like Randy Mitten would drop the puck maybe different than Swede Knox, for instance? And was it location, or was it more of the timing? And what, like, did some guys just throw it down faster? What was the significant difference from linesman to linesman?
You know what? You just said it. Really, you know, guys would be ready quicker than others, would want to get rid of the draw quicker than others. Everybody's got a cadence to it, timing to it. You know, my best advice would be to a centerman, when you know you're going to take that draw, get to your position first. Get there. Then if you have to talk to your wingers, or you have to look at the goalie to make sure he's ready, but you're in your position. So if the referee says to you, hey, let's go, you're already there. So you can turn around and you can focus, and it only takes a second to focus. I see a lot of guys like 2 feet away. So then when the guy says, let's go, they got to move into 2 feet. Well, that's a distraction to the other guy who might be ready. So that's just one little tidbit that kind of matters. You got to get to your spot and relax first.
Oh, so yeah, that's why we have you on, man. Great insight. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, buddy. You take care.